listening to Setting History Straight with Linda Watson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our program. And Tom Stapleton is with us today. Tom, we've been working on a series on the Book of Daniel, and we've done two sessions so far.
We're talking about things that are coming upon this world quite quickly.
Yes, they are. And so that's why it's so important for us to know and understand these books of the prophets, especially at this time, because, you know, the Father tells you that he repeats history. And many people have read those books and they think that they've already been fulfilled. Well, he plainly tells you in Ecclesiastes, the first chapter, that he repeats history and that he requires history to be repeated. And so I will tell my audience that Tom Stapleton has been studying the Book of Daniel for many, many years.
Longer than I'd like to think, actually, over 30 years. So it doesn't mean I know everything, but I've been knocking on that door for a while.
We're just real interested and excited to hear what you have to share with us. We're going to cover Daniel chapter 7.
Yeah, Daniel chapter 7. And when we understand, kind of get a grasp of 7, it actually launches us into Revelation 13. So I'm not sure how far we're going to get, but those two chapters are just completely linked together. You cannot separate them. Okay, well, I just want to start out, you know, you were talking about history. A fellow told me a while back something that just really hit me hard. He asked me, he said, they have learned something from history. And, you know, we always kind of wonder what they've learned, right?
Right.
But he said, they have learned something from history. And it is this: people do not learn from history. And of course, what happens then if you don't learn the lessons of the past, you are pretty much doomed to repeat them. So this is really important when it comes to the Bible, because if we don't learn the lessons of ancient Israel, we're going to fall prey to exactly the same outcomes that they experienced. In the light of Bible prophecy, this is where it becomes extremely important. Because we can see there was two issues with the Jewish nation, the Israelite nation, when Yeshua arrived on the scene the first time. They, number one, didn't recognize him in the prophetic writing as the Lamb of God. Of course, everyone knows that. They were all looking for a coming king, somebody that would destroy the Romans and set up his kingdom. And of course, the disciples, even at his ascension on the Mount of Olives, they said, are you at this time going to do this? So they, even after being with him for the length of time they were, they still did not understand the concept of the 2,000 years that was ahead of him before he would return again. And we have to ask why. And the only thing that I can come to is God has had to hide the timing from his people. He's given him the promise that, yes, he's going to set up a kingdom that's repeated over and over and over and over. And just, he's had to hide the timing, because if the disciples thought it was going to be another 2,000 years, well, who knows where we'd be today if that's what they thought. So God has hid the timing. So the prophecies are written in such a way that people and past generations have been able to apply them to possibly being fulfilled in their day. That is just the way it's written.
You see these four horsemen riding all throughout history. I mean, you would see war, and then you would see pestilence, and then you would see famine. It ran in cycles.
Sure. And so they applied these in history. I mean, you know, people that were studying these prophecies, and they were saying, well, this is what this means, and this is what this means, and this is what this means. And when I first became a believer, prophecy would just grab my attention. Some of these prophetic writings that we're going to talk about, Daniel 7 today, has been applied in history as a successive kingdoms. But when we hear at the time of the end, when we read that with fresh eyes, we can see that God is going to use this prophecy one last time. Every specification, as it were, will be fulfilled. And we're going to look at some of this today in when we look at Daniel 7, because I know I was taught that, you know, it was Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece and Rome, and then the dividing and so on. I suggest there's another fulfillment of this prophecy yet just ahead of us. And that's what we're going to be looking at, that possibility today. And I know some of our listeners may be kind of locked into to believing what they believe, but I'm going to ask if we can just put our objective minds in gear today and look at this with an open mind and just see what these prophecies are actually saying to us. Because we don't want to be like those that have gone before us and be misapplying what God is trying to show us today.
Right.
And that's, of course, why the Israelite nation, they misread the prophecies. But one other thing they did is they did not see him in the sanctuary service as the Lamb of God. And John the Baptist brought that out, but they didn't see him. So they missed him really on two counts. What I'm proposing, that if we can get the sanctuary service figured out in the appointed times and what those are trying to tell us prophetically, and then we can look at the prophecies, if we can combine the prophetic calendar in the festivals, the appointed time calendar, and overlay it on top of the prophecies, I would suggest that we're going to be able to figure this out. And that's what we're going to see in the prophecies. We're going to see world events, and we're going to see prophetic timing as far as the calendar. God's calendar is prophetic. And, you know, what I'm talking about is Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread and Pentecost and trumpets and Day of Atonement and Tabernacles. Those are all prophecies. If they're prophecies, we should be able to overlay them. Now, today, we're going to be looking at kingdoms of the world, the four dominant, five actually, and it's going to turn into four, dominant kingdoms of the world that are out there and alive and doing well today. And then we're going to see in the prophecy that it has an event, a salvational event, if you will, and it's the judgment. We're going to see the judgment in chapter 7. And we're going to be able to pinpoint exactly when that event happens, because it has to happen on a sanctuary time that revolves around judgment. We get there, we're going to see that. So let's just look at a couple of verses just to refresh our memories about how important prophecy is, just to get us rolling here in the right direction. In Proverbs 29, verse 18, it tells us, "Where there is no vision, the people let loose, but blessed is he who guards the Torah." Now, that's taken from the scriptures, 2009. Very interesting the way that is translated here. That word vision there is prophetic vision. So we're talking prophecy now. Where there is no prophetic vision, prophetic understanding, the people let loose. Now, if I was to say, you know, I just let loose, I just did whatever was on my mind. So the concept is, if we actually understood prophetic revelation, we would not let loose. We're told in the New Testament, it says, the love of Christ restrains us or constrains us. So we put in check those fleshly or earthly desires or whatever, because we understand what God's plan is. And this is what this is talking about. If we understood what was ahead of us, we would plan differently. We wouldn't do the things that we'd normally do. And that's why God has given us these prophecies, so that we will actually stop doing those things that come so naturally for us. When people lose their vision, we're talking more than just a plan that they have in their own mind. It's, we're losing the concept of prophetic vision. A lot of people don't even like studying it anymore, because one of the main reasons is people have attempted to study it in the past and they've made all these predictions that have never happened. So generally speaking, even pastors and teachers, Bible teachers, they don't even like to talk about prophecy anymore.
They don't know what it means.
Exactly. They don't want to go there because they think they're going to lose their job if they make a false prediction. So they're not even wanting to tread on that water. You know, we've got to understand that the prophets did not fully understand. And we're going to look at some of these verses. So this is really important here in Proverbs. It talks about the law and the prophets together. And we know they go together, but the idea is, when people start to be obedient to God's word, he opens doors for them. And prophetic understanding and prophetic vision is one of those doors he opens to his faithful people. And I believe that gift is going to be restored in his church, in his people. Of course, when we talk about churches, we're not talking about buildings. We're talking about his people. in Isaiah chapter 46 tells us that I am sovereign and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times things that are not yet done, saying my counsel shall stand. And you go to the checkout stands at the stores, and right there at the checkout stand are all these, you know, false prophecy predictions. And, you know, people have this in their mind, they want to know, but they don't understand that the Bible is full of prophetic writings that we could know what's coming. In Amos, it tells us when the Lord God decides to do something, he will first tell his servants, the prophets. So this is Amos 3:7. So if we want to know what God is about to do or going to do, I would say the best place to look would be within the prophets, within the writings of the prophets.
That's an excellent point, because when the Father has the ability to see what's going to happen and predict what's going to happen from the very beginning to the very end, I think that's amazing. That's why he was able to tell Jeroboam that Josiah is going to come. There's going to be a man named Josiah that comes and tears down all of this temple and all of the pagan sanctuaries that you've built. And he was able to see into the future and know what was going to come. That's unbelievable, but that's what he was able to do.
Yeah, that's something as humans, I know myself, I have no idea how God has that ability. I just trust it, because as you just picked out, there were things that were told, even Cyrus was told. I believe it was 100 or so years before he even came and defeated Belshazzar. And that was predicted many, many years in advance. And it's just, he has that ability, knowing the end from the beginning. And we just trust him at it. He's been very successful. Habakkuk tells us, chewed on this verse, there's so much in this. It says, when the Lord answered me and said, write the vision and make it plain on tablets, that he may run who reads it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it will speak, and it will not lie, though it tarries. Wait for it, because it will surely come. So the prophets tried to write in a way that the people would be able to understand it. Why was it important? Because they wrote things that were going to have great consequence on human beings, and they wanted to set in motion people. It says that he may run who reads it. So the effect of the prophecy should get us moving in a direction. And that's the purpose. That is the purpose. And these prophecies here that we're looking at the time of the end, the purpose of these prophecies is to tell us some major events that are coming.
And you know, Tom, they look back into the earlier writings in the Torah, and they saw the prophecies there, because there's prophecies written there, and they knew that there was a future fulfillment coming for the things that they were writing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's
very interesting, because they were able to see that. They had that vision. They understood that those prophecies did apply to them at that time, but they also had the insight to know, because the Father had given them that insight, that it was going to repeat in the future.
Right. Right. And, you know, it's interesting the way it is, because when the Israelite nation left Egypt, they left on a promise that they were going to go to the promised land. And that was a prophecy. There was a little delay in time because of their problems. But they left on a prophecy that they were going to the promised land. And we are looking at that exact same prophecy today. And we're looking for the ultimate fulfillment, the ultimate promised land that God has promised to give. You know, I think of the prayer of Yeshua when he says, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. You know, we're looking for that day when his will be done everywhere. And we won't have to teach our brother anymore, the Lord, because they will all know him. These are promised prophecies that we hold on to. And we keep going forward because of them. In Ezekiel 33, Ezekiel tells us, and again, the word of the Lord came to me saying, son of man, speak to the children of your people and say to them, when I bring the sword upon the land and the people of the land take a man from their territory and make him the watchman, when he sees the sword coming on the land, if he blows the trumpet and warns the people, then whoever hears the sound of the trumpet and does not take warning, if the sword comes and takes him away, his blood shall be on his own head. Then whoever hears the sound of the trumpet does not take warning. The sword come and takes him away. His blood shall be on his own head. Now, this is amazing because God has given us these writings in the prophets so that we do not need to be taken unawares. And Paul talks about that, being taken unawares. God's people need not to be surprised at what's coming on the earth. Now, as we read these prophecies, I believe they're telling us that America, the greatest nation that there ever was since there was a nation, I believe, I may be wrong in that, but that's what I believe, God has blessed this nation possibly even more than any other nation. And here's why I say that, because the United States was built on Judeo-Christian value. And I believe the United States has received the greatest blessing of any nation because of the combination of values they have, the Judeo-Christian values. However, like Israel of old, they have really squandered the blessing and they're turning away from God. And I believe the sword is coming on this land, and it is revealed in the prophecies. And we've talked about this before in Daniel chapter 8. It's very likely that that prophecy is talking about America's or the West's enemies coming in like a flood, doing some major damage here. And I believe that's what God is trying to tell us today, is we're headed for trouble because we've turned our backs on him. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. And he wants to get our attention. And I told someone the other day, a group of people I was talking to, I said, this time of trouble that's coming in front of us is a gift of love from God. And people say, well, how can you possibly say that? Well, he's trying to get us to fall to our knee and look up like Nebuchadnezzar and come to his right mind. And he knows that if he just keeps blessing this nation, we will never turn to him. But if he takes the blessings away, as he did Israel of old, they will turn their hearts back to him. So he's doing this actually out of love. He's warned us of what's coming out of love so that we can be prepared. So those that turn their hearts to him today, I believe, to a great degree, will be saved from the trouble that's coming. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. And when you read that parable in Jeremiah about the two sets of figs, it says two baskets of figs, one was good and one was evil. That says the pestilence, the famine, the war comes on the evil figs.
Right.
The people who are the good figs, it says they are good in character, but they have not turned their heart back. It says they don't know him, which means they don't know Torah.
Right.
And many of those people will repent and turn back and be allowed to go into the kingdom that's coming.
Mm-hmm. And we can see that. There's a great awakening. You know, the Malachi, I call it the Elijah message in Malachi. Yeshua tells us when Elijah comes, he shall restore all things. We can look at that as he mentioned John the Baptist being an Elijah message really is what John the Baptist was bringing. However, there will be a restoration of an Elijah message in the time of the end. And we see that in Malachi, where it says, he says, I will send you the prophet Elijah. To turn the hearts back, to turn the hearts back to the fathers and the children to the fathers and fathers to the children and so on. But this message is an awakening that we're to turn back to God and the old ways, the ways that he gave Israel. And this is what you're talking about, the Torah.
Calls it the ancient path, right? Yes.
Paths, yes. The ways that he gave his servant Moses, you know, and so often most people are overlooking that, but those are the laws of his kingdom. And this is what we're not getting. There's a set of laws that the world has and a set of laws that God has. So let's move on to 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 10 through 12. Of this salvation the prophets have inquired and searched carefully, who prophesied of the grace that would come to you, searching what or what matter of time the Spirit of Christ who was in them was indicating when he testified beforehand the sufferings of Christ and the glories that would follow. Now, to me, this really nails the purpose of the prophets. It says that they searched carefully and diligently. They inquired. That means they're asking. And I can see, you know, a prophet saying, like Daniel, Father, help me to understand what these books of Jeremiah are trying to say. I understand that they say that 70 years in the wilderness, or 70 years in Babylon, and then we're going back. So he was struggling of the fulfillment of these prophecies. And then Gabriel came to him and gave him additional information. And I see that today is what we should be doing as a people, as God's people, is studying these prophecies and say, okay, this is what I understand. I need to know more information. And I believe as we do that, he will give us information, not only to what's going to happen, but here Peter says, as to the matter of time. So we're looking at two things. We're looking at events and time. And so the prophecies contain that. And today, as we're looking at prophecies, we're going to see a time period in these prophecies, and we're going to see them build as we go through this. We have a time times and a half in Daniel chapter 7, which we'll look at. We see a 2300 day or 2300 evening and morning time period in Daniel chapter 8. In Daniel chapter 12, we see a time times and a half, 1290 day period, and a 1,335-day period, and five times in Revelation, we have the time times and a half, which is 42 months, 3.5 years, and 1,260 days. We see that five, that time proxy, five times of the Revelation. So these are time-specific prophecies that we need to understand today. And here's why. If I thought you were going to go through a time of trouble, Linda, and it was only going to be a few weeks, you could probably get by with what was in your fridge if you rationed.
Exactly.
But if I told you, Linda, it's going to be 1,260 days, what would you do?
Yeah, well, you would need to, I think you need to plan for that.
I think you would need to plan for that.
What Joseph did.
Exactly. I mean, we have got lessons in the Word, and those lessons of history, we'll repeat them. The people that did not prepare for that, they had to come begging to Egypt because Joseph had prepared. And the same as Noah, when Noah was told to build an ark, number one, God could have just airlifted him out of this planet so that he didn't have to go through that. But he didn't. He said, Noah, I want you to prepare. And not only that, I want you to put all the food that you're going to need inside the ark so that you guys would have something to eat during the storm. Now, Yeshua said, as in the days of Noah, so shall it be. And I'm thinking that there's more of that story than what we first recognized. We may need to do some preparation for this time. And I think that's how God's going to save us out of the worst part of it, is that we have prepared. And Peter goes on to say in 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 19, he says, we also have a more sure word of prophecy, whereunto you would do well to take heed as a light that shines in a dark place. Now, Yeshua said that there's going to be a time of trouble such as it never was since it was a nation. That's probably one of the darkest places this world has ever gone into. And surely we need this, the light of Bible prophecy to navigate us through this, like a roadmap. Revelation 12:17 has an identifier for God's people in the time of the end. It says, the dragon was wroth with the woman and went to make war with the remnant of her seed. Now, this is God's last day people. And it says, which keep the commandments of God. And when it says that, it's talking about all of them. It's not just talking about 10, but it's talking about all of what God has written and have the testimony of Yeshua the Messiah. Now, that's kind of mysterious. I like to think that Yeshua had a testimony. One aspect of his testimony was that the devil has nothing in me. That's a testimony. That's a testimony that we need to claim, I believe, before the Messiah comes back. We're going to have to get things in order. But I don't believe that's what this is talking about. If we go a little further down in Revelation chapter 19, it tells us what the testimony, Revelation 19:10, it says, I felt his feet to worship him, and he said to me, see thou do it not. I am thy fellow servant and of thy brethren that have the testimony of Yeshua. Worship God, for the testimony of Yeshua is the spirit of prophecy.
Now, you know, Tom, I think it's really interesting if people haven't looked at how the Messiah taught he taught everybody in parables. And even David said that in Psalms 49, I open my mouth with parables. And so he taught with parables, and those parables are actually prophecies for today.
They certainly are, yeah. But most of the parables he taught were prophetic, and we can see that. What I'm seeing in this is God's last day people, just before his coming, will have two identifiers. One is that they keep the commandments, all of them, and they have the spirit of prophecy. And this is where we kind of started that in Proverbs, where there is no vision or prophetic understanding. The people cast off all restraint, but happy is he who keeps the Torah. So why are you happy? Because you have prophetic insight. And, you know, people are scared of prophecy. You should not be scared of prophecy. It's God's gift so that we can navigate through this dark time that we're coming into. So let's, a couple more verses here, and then we're going to delve into chapter 7. 1 Corinthians 13, 9 and 10, Paul tells us something interesting. He says, "For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when that which is perfect has come, then that which is in part will be done away." Now, it seems kind of confusing, but what he's actually saying, I believe, is that the prophets who have gone before us tried to figure out the best they could to what God was trying to tell them. And they taught about that, you know, the kingdom's coming. But they didn't understand every detail. But when the prophecy is actually fulfilled, we're going to be able to look back and say, oh, that's what that meant. What we're doing today is we're looking at a bigger picture. Do we have all the details? No, we don't. We can never forget the fact that we are on a need-to-know basis. And if we don't need to know it, he's not going to disclose the information. So we need to work with what we have and try and make sense out of what we have today. And there is a good chance that we may have a piece of this puzzle out of place. But I do believe that we are getting a bigger picture of what's going on here in the world. We're starting to see what these prophecies talked about. In Daniel chapter 12 verse 4, it says, "But you, Daniel, keep this message secret. You must close the book and keep it secret until the time of the end." Many people will go here and there looking for true knowledge, and true knowledge will increase. So
interesting, because Isaiah 29 picks up on that same thing, and it talks about there are things that have not been revealed to you, but he's talking to a people that it's going to be revealed to. Isaiah 29 verse 11, "And the visions of all is become unto you as the word of the book is sealed, which men deliver to one that is learned, and say, read this, I pray thee. And he said, I cannot, for it is sealed." So the books that were sealed especially was the book of Daniel and part of the book of Revelations, right? They actually were sealed. It is telling you, they gave them the book and said, read it to us and tell us what it means. And the people through the centuries have said, we can't do that.
Yeah.
We can't do that. We can't read it. But when you read on in the chapter, you see that there's going to be people it's revealed to.
That verse is amazing. I've read that many times, and I'm just in awe every time I read it. It's exactly what's going on. Is people want to know what it means, and they give it to somebody that's learned. So that, to me, is talking about a theologian. So they give it to a theologian. He says, I don't know what this means. It's sealed. And then they go to somebody that's unlearned, and they say, well, I don't know what it means. I'm unlearned.
You're right.
I'm illiterate. So nobody's got any answer. And I have to say, why? Because God says that he's going to give answers. And I believe we're going to the theologians, we're going to people, instead of going directly to the word. And this is what I'm really trying to emphasize now. So many people think they know what the word says, but if they would just go back and reread it, they could see that what they've been taught is not what it says.
And exactly. It's what people have interpreted. They're believing the interpretations.
Yeah. Now, this in Daniel chapter 12, I believe that when Daniel was in these visions, he saw actually Yeshua, and Yeshua was involved. And we can see this in Daniel chapter 3 in the fiery furnace. It said there was one like the Son of God that was in there with the three Hebrew friends of Daniel. And we see him show up. It seems like he shows up in Daniel chapter 8 in the interpretation of Daniel chapter 8. And I think that these were the words either of Gabriel or Yeshua himself in Daniel chapter 4. Let's just read this for what it says again. He says, "But you, Daniel, keep the message secret. You must close the book and keep it secret until the time of the end." Now, I have a question. If God says through his son or through Gabriel that this book is going to be sealed, now that's the whole book of Daniel. If this book was going to be sealed until the time of the end, in my mind, any premature attempt to unseal the book could be full of errors because God said it would be sealed.
And that's why people have turned off to prophecy, because people have been guessing and their guess wasn't correct. And when people see that, they say, oh my goodness, you know, it turns them off.
Yeah, it does turn them off. Yeah, but we need to keep going back to the book.
In that same chapter, Isaiah 29, verse 18, it says, "In that day," which I think is we're approaching that day, right? "Shall the deaf hear the words of the book, and the eyes of the blind shall see out of the obscurity and out of the darkness." So there's coming a time when it's going to be revealed.
Yes. Yeah. And I believe we're there. We are there. And for people that are searching and looking, they're finding answers. And that's what we need to do. We need to go back to the book as we've never done before as a people. Seek the wisdom and understanding. In Daniel and Revelation, very interesting. And we made this point a little bit earlier. At the first coming, they missed it because they missed the prophecy of the first coming. They overlooked them. And they also overlooked the festival calendar. I propose that this is the problem right now, is people are misapplying, or they're either not even using the festival calendar, or they're misapplying the fulfillments of what those things mean. And they're also misapplying the prophecies, or they're looking at the wrong prophecy. Now, Yeshua said of the time of the end, he focuses in on Daniel and he says, "Let the reader understand this." And it doesn't mean that there's no other prophets that have anything to do with the time of the end, except that he zeroes in on Daniel. And when he does that, he's telling us to go back there and understand what's written. And when we do that, when we start looking at Daniel, we see Revelation is a sister book. And we're going to see that. We're going to jump right into Daniel chapter 7 now. We don't want to read every verse. So we're just going to go through this a little bit quickly so that you can get started on this and start doing your own homework, because I really would want to encourage you to do that. Take everything that we're saying here today and take it back to the book. In the first verse of Daniel chapter 7, there's something that kind of frustrates me, and it's just kind of like Paul in Thessalonians when he says, he starts talking about the Antichrist that's going to come. And he says, "Well, don't you remember when I was with you, I told you all about this." And I'm thinking, I don't remember that, Paul. where is this recorded? So we're at a little disadvantage, but those people back then, they would have understood what he was talking about. In Daniel chapter 7, in the first verse, it says, "In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head while on his bed. Then he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts." Oh my goodness, that bothers me. You mean we don't have the details? We just got the main facts? This is amazing. I believe that if we had all the details, then those attempts to put this prophecy in history would have failed. But God just gave the main facts. And so when people looked in history, generations that have gone before us, and applied these prophecies in their day, thinking that this was a succession of world kingdoms, if we had all the facts of this prophecy, I don't think they've been able to do that. So here again, it's how God has had this stuff recorded. In this prophecy, you're going to go through here, and we're going to see that there's a lion with eagle's wings. And then there's a bear that comes on the scene that has three ribs in its mouth. That's verse 5. Three ribs in its mouth, and it's told to devour much flesh. Then a leopard comes on the scene that's given dominion, and he has four heads. And then it says he saw a fourth beast in verse 7. This is a terrible beast. This thing was devouring, had huge teeth, and it has 10 horns. So we go through there, and then we see that there's another horn. So there's 11. And then it says three of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. So that would mean that this beast would be left with seven horns and then an additional horn, which would be eight horns. But we're told that this additional horn, this extra horn, was different than the other ones. So what is this talking about? Just go a little bit ahead in the prophecy in verse 17. It says, those great beasts, which are four kingdoms which arise out of the earth. Okay, so we don't need to guess what these beasts are. They are kingdoms. And this is how we interpret prophecy. It says in verse 2 of Daniel chapter 7, Daniel spoke, saying, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. Now, the great sea in prophecy is referencing people. Nations, languages, and tongues. We can see this in Revelation 17. It says, the waters that you saw are nations, languages, peoples, and tongues. And in prophetic writings and symbolic, when it talks about a great sea, it's a great sea of people. It's the nations of the world. So we've got a picture now that we're developing, is that out of the great nations of the world, there are five kingdoms. We've got a lion with eagle's wings. I propose that's two nations right there that are associated very closely together. They're working together. We've got a bear, we've got a leopard, and then a dreadful beast that has 10 horns. Now, we can see that the 10 horns in verse 24 of Daniel chapter 7, it says the 10 horns are 10 kings who arise out of that kingdom. Okay, so now we're getting a picture. We've got the four dominant players in this world. Now, I really don't think that any of these kingdoms could possibly be Chile.
No, they are not. In fact, they probably are prominent nations around the world.
They would have to be the prominent nations that are in control. We've kind of built a little foundation. Okay, so we're looking at, here we've arrived at the time of the end. The book is supposed to be unsealed now. It's talking about four kingdoms that are alive and well. And if you read through this, there's nowhere in this prophecy that says one kingdom takes out another kingdom. In fact, it actually says the opposite. We're going to get there in a moment. It says the opposite. It says these four kingdoms, these four players are all on the scene. They're all contemporaries at the time of the end. And they're all struggling for world supremacy. That's what's going on. Now, let's just let our imagination go right now. Linda, I'm going to ask you, what are the major kingdoms in this world that seem to have a lot of control and are calling the shots? What? Just give me a couple.
America, Britain, China, and Russia, maybe one of the countries in the Middle East.
Okay.
So I would say Iran might be a good candidate for that.
Or possibly even Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
So there you've got it. Now, that's excellent. And because these are the dominant kingdoms in the world that are on the world stage and they're major players. Every day you can read in the newspaper or see on the news, there's something going on in these kingdoms. It's very significant. Let's talk about Brexit. This is huge, and this is prophetic, actually. The European Union now is in a restructure mode, primarily because of Brexit. There's been lots of question come in on the validity of the European Union. France and Germany are really foremost in the European Union. They're talking about having an army that is working together all across Europe,
right.
And so on. So this European Union is in the making. It's a very big powerhouse. I believe it's about 450 million strong, larger population than the United States as a unit. and, of course, Russia and China. Now, when we talk about those countries, those are the countries. There's England, which is UK, obviously, and the United States, France, Russia, and China are the UN Security permanent members on the Security Council.
Right,
and this happened because of the Second World War. They were the allies that defeated Nazism and Japan. And they formulated what we know today as the UN. And they are the most powerful nation in the world that govern basically everything that happens in the UN, these five nations. I propose that these four kingdoms are represented in the United Nations as the most powerful nations on the earth. And those are the permanent members of Security Council on the UN.
If not, they're major players. They're going to play a role.
Exactly. Now, so what I'm suggesting is that the United States and Great Britain are allied together, and they're forming alliances tighter than ever, and that is because of Brexit. I suggest that people need to watch what's going on with Brexit right now. It is front and center. It's huge. Theresa May is talking about resigning as prime minister, and Nigel Farage is going to get into the fray again. And we know that he was campaigning for Donald Trump over here in the United States. I suggest that there's an alliance building there that we haven't seen yet, but it's coming. So I would suggest that Great Britain would be the lion represented here, and the United States as the eagle in a confederation of two great nations.
That's very interesting, because I didn't pick up on that, but it really is talking about two nations there, because it talks about one is the lion, and then it talks about one that has eagle's wings. Hmm. I see that also as one.
Yes, yeah. It says verse 4, the first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. And I watched till the eagle's wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it. And we're told these are kingdoms it's talking about. So
Britain's symbol is a lion, and America's symbol is an eagle.
That's right. Yeah, it's like God says, I know the end from the beginning. I've heard it said, actually, Kent Hovind, he said one time, he says, has it ever occurred to you that nothing occurs to God? Yeah, I thought that was good. So at the time of the end, we have two great nations on the planet. One is symbolizes a lion, one is an eagle. There's another indication that God knows the end from the beginning right there. So now it says that the eagle's wings are plucked off. This is the sword that's coming on this great nation of the United States. It's going to take a hit, as it were, very soon. And we saw this, we've talked about this before in Daniel chapter 8, it's going to take a hit, that the eagle is going to be plucked off the lion, and then the lion's going to have to stand on its own 2 feet like a man. And, you know, that's just a figure of speech.
And, you know, in previous history, that also would have represented the American Revolution, which separated Britain and America, remember, and it's a forerunner.
Sure.
And
England, you know, had to stand on its own. That's a good point. Yeah. But now we can see that alliance. And I believe the reason why the alliance is coming back now is it's that Judeo-Christian set of values that's uniting these kingdoms. And we're going to see within this also, within the lion and the eagle's wings, those that come under that umbrella, I would say, are Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and South Africa.
Yes.
All the Anglo-Saxon nations, Western Europe. Western Europe will be part of that. But Western Europe, I believe the Western Europe part is in that fourth kingdom that has many kingdoms that make it up. It has the 10 horns be reformed, reshaped, because of what's happening, especially with Brexit is bringing this on. And they will probably have 10 primary kingdoms.
Okay.
Verse 8 in chapter 7, it says, when I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one coming up among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. And there in this horn were the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking pompous words or great things. In my Bible, there's a cross-reference to Revelation 13, 5, and 6. Exact same thing happening. There's a beast in Revelation chapter 13 that's given a mouth that speaks great things. Same thing, pompous words. And so I'm proposing that that mouth right there is the same entity in Revelation 13. And we're going to get there and just talk about that for a minute.
And I believe the eyes that he's talking about there have to do with the internet and all the ways that they have to track you today.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no kidding.
Facebook, many of the other social medias, and all the other ways that they track you through your credit cards. And this man, whoever he is heavily involved in that.
I was just walking around the other day and just having a conversation with someone. And on my cell phone, this recording came out that was just asking me if I wanted to get something or buy something, and it had to do with the conversation I was just having with someone. What's going on here?
I get up on the Sabbath to go to church, and it tells me how far it is to go to the church that I go to.
Oh, and wonderful.
So how does it know that I'm going?
So that's all part of what's going on. Okay, so right there at the time that the little horn is speaking, we see something going on. In verse 9, it says, I watched till thrones were put in place. The Ancient of Days was seated. His garment was white as snow. His hair on his head was like pure wool. His throne was a fiery flame, its wheels a burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. Verse 10, 1,000 thousands ministered to him, 10,000 times 10,000. We're talking a lot of beings here. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court was seated and the books were opened. And then verse 11 says, I watched then because of the sound of the pompous words which the horn was speaking. I watched till the beast was slain and its body destroyed and given to the burning flame. As for the rest of the beast, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. Now, this is what I was saying earlier, is that during the time that the little horn is speaking, doing its thing, we see something going on. We see something during the time that the little horn is speaking in verse 8, and then in verse 11, we see the little horn speaking again. And then we have sandwiched in the middle, it says the court was seated and the books were open. So we see
judgment.
This is a judgment scene. A little bit down the road here, it says in verse 29. Actually, let's back up to verse 19. This is when I believe it to be Gabriel. Can't prove that. Doesn't really matter. But an angel comes to Daniel to give him the interpretation. In verse 19, it says, then I wished to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the others. That's because it was made up of many kingdoms, I believe, to be part of that.
Yes.
It says it was exceedingly dreadful, with teeth of iron and nails of bronze, which devoured broken pieces and trampled the residue with his feet. And about the 10 horns that were on its head, and about the other horn which came up, before whom 3 fell, namely that horn which had the eyes and a mouth which spoke pompous words, whose appearance was greater than his fellows. I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailing against them until, now this is the key right here. It says, I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailing against them until the Ancient of Days came and a judgment was made in favor of the saints. And the time came for the saints to possess the kingdom. Now, we're told in verse 25 and 26, a little more information on these details. It says, and he spoke pompous words against the Most High. This is this little horn again. He says, he shall persecute the saints of the Most High and shall intend to change times and law. The little horn is the instigator for persecution of God's people. He zeroes in on what that persecution is about. the little horn actually, and we're going to see this in Revelation 13, takes control of the whole world. He enforces restrictions on conscience regarding God's laws. He changes, this word, he changes times. This is written in Aramaic, so we don't have the word moed here. The Chaldean word here for changing times is the same Hebrew word as moedim. So we can see in this prophecy that this enemy of God that's going to persecute God's people is going to change his sacred times and his laws. So this power is going to change God's appointed times. In other words, he's got his own set, and he's going to replace them. So we saw this in Daniel, and this I stress so much that the first six chapters are key to understanding the prophecies at the time of the end. There was a law made that Daniel was not allowed to worship any other than the state-approved religion. That was in chapter 6, we saw that.
Right.
We can see here at the time of the end that this little horn power is going to create laws that are in direct opposition to the laws that we have come to know and cherish, namely the Torah and also the festival calendar. So he's going to have his own appointed times, and this is how God's people are going to be persecuted. It will be illegal to do those things that we have conviction of doing, namely the Torah and his appointed times. And we can see this. We have a preview in Daniel chapter 6 of this very same thing. And we also see in Daniel chapter 3 where they were forced, at the pains of death, they were forced to worship an image to the kingdom, Nebuchadnezzar. And this we can see in Revelation 13 too, that there was an image made to the beast, and that this kingdom forced all to worship this image. Same thing, exactly the same thing.
It can be as simple as a video or an online recording on the news.
Exactly. Now, also in Daniel chapter 7, we saw that the little hornet says that he is going to be in operation for a time, times, and a half a time. Is time times and a half is equal to the 1260-day time periods in Revelation, because in Revelation it's called time times and a half as well.
Right.
So it looks like that's the 42-month period, 1260-day period, a 3.5-year period. So this little horn power, it says that judgment in verse 26, as we were just looking there, I'm just flipping back here. So he's given in verse 25, it says, for a time, times, and a half a time, but the court shall be seated, and they shall take away his dominion. So the court takes away his dominion. These 10,000 times 10,000 are seated. Now, so if the court sits, and then they take away his kingdom, they take away his kingdom, he only has 3.5 years. So at the 3.5-year mark, his kingdom is taken away. But it says the court is seated before. Four, and then a sentence is pronounced, and then it says that this power is destroyed. So it's destroyed at the end and a half. So what I'm suggesting here is this judgment that takes place within the time frame of that 3.5-year period. Now, I ask people, okay, so this judgment is part of the prophecy, but it's part of the prophetic calendar of prophecy. So what part of the prophetic calendar does judgment have a role in? The reason why so many have missed the mark on the prophecies is because they haven't put the prophetic calendar within the prophecies.
Okay.
And so we can see events now. In Daniel, we've seen four kingdoms. We've seen a little horn. We see the little horn reigns for 3.5 years. We see a judgment, some kind of judgment that happens that takes away his kingdom. Well, the taking away of his kingdom has to be at the end of the 3.5 years. So the judgment that is in motion or that is in play begins before the 3.5-year period, because at the 3.5-year period, he's executed.
Yes. Okay, yes.
So now my question is, what event, prophetic calendar, does judgment play a role in? Which day on the calendar?
Spread? I would think it would be atonement or trumpets.
Right, exactly. So now when we're reading the prophecies, and we're going to see this all the way through to Revelation, we're going to be able to read the prophecies. We're going to see significant events that are on the prophetic calendar. They're in there all over the place. When we know this, it unlocks another door. So during the time that the little horn is speaking, the time of judgment begins. And so we know that that's in the fall. So during the time that the little horn is speaking, judgment will begin and an execution will take place sometime after the judgment begins. We don't know exactly when, but we can place, I believe, in any of the homework that I've done, there's different ideas on this, but we know for sure, I believe we can know for sure, that the judgment is a fall feast. And the Day of Atonement, we know through the typology, the Day of Atonement was the day on which Israel was cleansed from all its sins from that year. There was an investigation, if you will. Okay, who's actually accepted God's plan? And then they were to be in affliction, and then everyone would move forward into the new year with a clean slate, if you will.
Absolutely. And he says it's written in the heavens also. And at that season, you're in the constellation of Libra, which is the scales.
Oh, there you go. There you go. The heavens declare the glory of God.
Interesting stuff.
So that's chapter 7. And here again, I recommend people read that.
So, Tom, we're going to have to stop here and make this a part 1 and part 2 for Daniel 7. So thank you so much for coming on with us. And this is going to be the end of Daniel 7, part 1. And we will continue with Daniel 7 in another program, part 2. So we're going to say blessings to all and good night.